Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat.
It's our weekly BoozCast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
Woohoo!
Yeah. And yeah, well, we have a we did a thing on Patreon where we asked our Patreon supporters if they had any booze related questions for us, and we got a question.
Nice. Who's it from?
It's from Fiona.
Hi, Fiona.
Hey, Fiona. Thanks for your question. Should I read it?
Yeah, go okay. for
it. She says, "Hi." She has two exclamation points, so she's excited. We're excited to hear from you. She says, "Hi, I'm Korean, and I'd love to learn about soju. Pretty much the only thing I know about it is that in New York and California, you can sell it without a liquor license, but I'd love to learn more." So we're going to talk about soju today.
Yeah. So for some of our Patreon questions, we can answer them just with a very basic answer, but this was broad enough that we just are going to give you a whole episode about soju and drinking culture in Korea.
Yeah, because why not? Soju's nice to drink.
Yeah.
And there's a lot you can do with it. So soju is unofficially considered the national drink of South Korea. I don't know if any nation has a national drink.
I feel like some do.
Like, it might be, okay, so maybe officially or unofficially. I'll have to fact check that. Either way, it's considered the national drink of South Korea. So the word soju actually means burned liquor.
Mm.
But it can also be called noju, which means dew liquor, which could possibly be referring to the drops collected in the vat from, like, the vapors during distilling.
Hmm.
Maybe. It's possible. And where it comes from is actually from Iraq, which you've mentioned before,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's a liquor from, or a spirit back then from Arabia.
Yeah.
Which is made from anise. Is what I found.
Yeah, it has it can have an anise flavor to it.
Okay. Would I say that wrong? It's not anise, it's anise?
I don't know. Fine.
Okay.
I think that's like basil and basil.
Okay. All right. Cool. You say anise, I say anise. Basil, basil. Fun. Okay. So it was brought to South Korea during the Goryeo dynasty, which is in the early 13th century. By Mongol invaders, I don't know. I always think of, like, the Mongols in Mulan.
But they were rolling up with a bunch of booze. That would have been a different movie.
Yeah, that would have been very different.
I don't think that was the... I don't think that's
but they were, doing. Like, all over the place, right? Conquering all
they
of,
did
like...
A lot of conquering.
Yeah, they did a lot of conquering. So Genghis Khan.
Look, this is not a...
This isn't a history podcast.
It is. About alcohol.
Okay. Don't ask us about history unrelated to alcohol. We didn't research it. So Genghis Khan actually introduced Iraq to the Mongolians, and then his grandson, Kublai Khan, brought it to South Korea when he was the first emperor of the Yuan dynasty. So it's traditionally made of rice and wheat, and it's distilled, and it gives the traditional, like, the original recipe a very high alcohol content. Do you want to know how you make it?
Go for it.
It's fun.
I'm excited.
So first you make, you have to make a fermented enzyme, which is kind of like a starter culture, similar to, like, when you make your own kombucha, it's called the mother or something like that, or culture.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't make kombucha. That's for another time.
Mother mushroom.
Mother mushroom. So you make it by pulverizing wheat and then, like, letting it ferment a little bit. And that's called nuruk.
Oh, and yeah. It's like a little disc. Like, it's like a...
Yeah. Well, you have to, like, mash it. And then you mix it with water, and then you spread it in a bowl or a basket, and this is how you make the disc. You pound it, and I actually saw a photo of, like, somebody, like, stepping on it with little, like, special shoes.
Oh.
Just fun. And it makes a dry wheat cake. So you leave that out to dry and ferment, and after about 3 weeks, it's rock solid. So you pulverize it again in a mortar until it's like a dust. And then you make a big batch of white rice and you let it cool. And it's important to let it cool because if it's too warm, it'll make it sour. Like the temperature definitely affects the taste later. So then you combine the pulverized wheat, rice, and water to make a mash. And then you ferment it again for another 12 days. And then to distill it, you boil it in a sojugori, which is like a big iron still, and that is how you make the traditional Angdong soju.
Do you have for the traditional soju, like alcohol content? Are we talking like more like a foolproof spirit?
Yeah, like 40, definitely more 45? Of like yeah, definitely more of a like closer to like a vodka.
Okay, so not like lighter fluid, just more like where what we would think, because.
Right.
Like, regular soju is a lot lower, yeah?
Oh, yeah. No, well, what happened was in 1965, the South Korean government banned the use of rice in brewing, and this was during the post-liberation period. So this was kind of like a type of prohibition, but it wasn't about morality the way that it was in the States. This was actually because they had a shortage in the rice crop, so it was to help alleviate that. And during that time, some people started brewing with sweet potatoes and tapioca, which I thought sounded really good. Mm. It is a little bit diluted, though. I guess that was like also part of it. It started trending towards lighter alcohol. But there's still some brands that do it that way. Chemisol, Chumchurum, and Good Day are a few examples. I hope I pronounced those right.
Are those are like the diluted ones or the high concentration ones?
Those are more diluted. Okay. Those have like a lower alcohol content. And these are like so the prohibition was lifted in 1999. So people started making it in the old style again. And so there are some brands who make something that's closer to the traditional Angdong soju. But there are still a lot of brands who still do it the way that they did it during the prohibition, and that's more like 25% alcohol. Hmm. So yeah, like so the most part, modern soju is much lower in alcohol content. And this is probably, to answer Fiona's question, this is probably closer to the kind of soju that can be sold without a wine or sold with a wine and beer permit and doesn't require a liquor license. And it's really popular. This kind of soju is really popular with young people, too. Mm. We tried that fruity soju
a little bit ago. Yeah, that's like 12%.
Yeah, but it tastes like straight juice.
Oh, yeah. Well, even the 20-25% soju, it's like, it's not like drinking like vodka. It's light. It's really just kind of like slightly earthy, a little sweet. Like, it's a very... I mean, I can kind of see why the style stuck around even when it became legal to sell the higher one again, because mm-hmm. like it's very, like, I'm sure the drinking culture kind of relates to being able to drink a lot of the stuff at 20%. If you suddenly kick it up to 40%, then you're playing a different game there.
No, you're going to cover the drinking customs a little later, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that. Wow. But I actually did find some more info on the question that Fiona asked us. So what?
Oh, so her question, like, so she said without a liquor license. It's not without it's without a liquor license, but you still have to have a beer and wine license.
Yes, okay. You still have to have a beer and wine license, yeah. Which when we were doing research a lot earlier and when you were talking about it, you mentioned that it's like really expensive in LA to get a liquor license.
Yeah, I mean, New York and California are two of the most expensive places to get the ability to serve. And the difference between a beer and wine license versus a liquor license is massive. Yeah, so that makes sense as to why you would try to get something else in there.
Yeah.
In that beer and wine license.
Right, well, in California, after some lobbying by the Korean Restaurant Owners Association, they actually got a bill passed which allowed for the sale of soju by establishments previously licensed to sell only beer and wine in California. And it's even written into the bill that soju is served as a traditional drink accompanying spicy Korean meals and used to enhance the meal's flavor. So, like, that was their reasoning for, we should be able to have this in our restaurants, and we're not going to sell, like, hard liquor. We just want to sell soju because it goes with the meal. It's part of the culture of eating Korean food.
Right.
And drinking soju with it. So that specifically exempts soju, the sale of soju, from regulation. Well, not all regulation, just right. You don't have to have a liquor license to sell it, as long as it's clearly labeled and it's less than 25% alcohol.
Which I know from my experience in restaurants, a lot of people have taken advantage of this, because I worked at many a cafe or restaurant that only has a beer and wine license, that it's not Korean places, but that bring in soju to try to have a cocktail menu.
Oh yeah.
And just, like, low key, like, you don't really, like, some people will be honest and say, yes, it's soju based, we don't have liquor in house.
Right. But there are some restaurants that even, like, if you could order, like, a vodka soda, and they're not going to tell you that it's not vodka, but they're going to bring you a soju soda.
Yeah.
Or, like, a gin and tonic or whatever. But, like, they're not breaking any laws because they're using soju.
Right.
They're just not, like, they're making cocktails out of it and not really explicitly saying to their customers that it is soju. I'm sure if, like, they asked, it wouldn't be a big deal, like, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Like, it's not, like, so much false advertising or anything like that.
I think some people definitely have kind of hidden the fact. I've been to restaurants and I'm like, wait a second, this is a soju cocktail menu, and that's cool. Like, that's totally fine. Like, it's not like, okay, it's a lower alcohol cocktail than you might have, but that doesn't make it a bad cocktail. But you know, yeah. definitely, I've been served a soju Bloody Mary in my day, and only figured it out after the fact.
Well, it is, like, I mean, I feel like the first thing that would tip me off is, like, it's gonna definitely right off the bat be like, this isn't that strong.
Yeah, which, you know, depending on how you make your Bloody Mary, like,
you might not notice.
Yeah, like, that's an easy drink to hide anything in, really, so.
True.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
But manufacturers have also taken advantage of it, because there's a lot of, like, similarly distilled spirits from other parts of Asia, like Japanese soju. They started relabeling some of their products, because the rule is that it has to be clearly labeled as soju and it has to be less than 25%. So they just took their product and they relabeled it as soju for sale in those regions that soju is allowed to be in establishments with a wine and beer license.
Well, that makes sense, because soju is and shochu are basically the same thing.
Yeah,
I mean, they're made just, in the exact same way.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. But part of the loophole is that, like, it has to be labeled as soju.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's really popular with the young people in South Korea particularly. And it's thought of a drink of solidarity. So it's part of the custom. Like, you don't... That's the only... Really the only... I know you're covering this part, but the only part of the culture that I really... like, no, is that you don't drink alone.
Right. Yeah, so that is definitely, like, one of the things that I ran across was that, like, it's not really a thing to drink alone. I'm sure people do it, but the culture is based around communal drinking. It's a social activity. So for, like, drinking in Korea, what they drink, obviously soju, like you said, the number one thing that people consume. But there are other, like, there are, like, thousands of unique fermented beverages that you find in Korea. There are, like, a lot of rice wines, which, you know, we're all pretty familiar with sake. This is basically stuff that is in the same family. It's made is the same way that you start out soju and shochu.
Yeah.
So you start with that same, like, rice and, like, a nuruk, and, like, it's just a basic fermentation. So you don't distill anything. They're classified into, like, two categories. There's, like, milky and clear. Makgeolli is like the one that you see more popular. It was one of the first distilled spirits in Korea, possibly the earliest based on some records. And it reigned like supreme in Korea until like the 70s. If anybody's had like a nigori sake, like an unfiltered sake, it's a lot like that. So it's very milky, it's sweet, it can be slightly effervescent. Alcohol content's very low. It's like 6 to 9% tops. And the way that you would have it in Korea is like it's usually sold or it's usually brought out in like a ceramic pot with a ladle. And so, because it separates very quickly. So they have it like in a little pot so they can kind of stir it. And then you drink it from like a smaller bowl for the same reason. So it's like a wider base to keep it from separating as quickly. And then opposite that, you have Cheongyu, which is like the clear version. So it's just the same thing. It's more similar, once again, to like sake that we all know. But it's like...
Right. Is that the filtered version?
Yeah, it's filtered. It's clear. Similar alcohol content. Similar flavor notes, just, you know, different varieties of rice wine. And then if you take that same stuff and infuse it with herbs and flowers, which actually they do, both of these can sometimes be infused with herbs and flowers in like various Korean styles, sometimes like heavily infused to the point that to me it sounded almost like a aperitif or like digestif kind of build. Mm. And those were more for like medicinal reasons. And there's even one, I thought this was cool, because we're going to talk about it a bit more when we talk about some of the cocktails that are popular. But there's one form of the cloudy rice wine, the milky one, that it's brewed in the spring, and it's so thick that you, like, it's called a hiwachu, and you actually consume it with a spoon. So somewhere on the border, I guess, of, like, yogurt and wine, which I didn't know there was a
border there. Those things could be... together like part of the same world.
I like the idea of alcohol that you can consume with a spoon.
I mean, I'm really into those alcoholic ice creams now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's sort of like that, but then this is like an old school thing. Like, okay. It's just, you know, an old traditional thing. They're just very thick. It was like a porridge, but like an alcoholic porridge. Mm. So yeah, and then of course like fruit wines are popular. Are popular across Asia, but Korea has a whole slew of fruit wines, and then beer. So, you know, you've got rice wines, fruit wines, beer, soju. Yeah, I looked into, like, the cocktail culture in Korea, and it's just like every other, like, major city around the world. There's a cutting-edge cocktail scene developing. South Korea is a little behind just because it's taken them a little bit longer to get, like, the import licenses that a lot of us kind of take for granted.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, just, to, like, to build up the amount of, like, whiskeys that are allowed to sell there. Or, like, okay. You know, like, Pisco was only recently allowed on the market. So there's lots of spirits that just kind of have taken longer to get in there. But it's, you know, I'm sure that you can find some of the most amazing cocktails in Seoul than, you know, comparable to any other major city in the world. It's just, it's the nature of the quickly spreading, like, high-end cocktail culture right now. But
hipster culture.
Yeah, exactly. but there are a couple things, and like bomb shots are very popular.
I didn't know that, like, I always wondered about that, if it was just like kind of like the Americanized thing that people do, because like sake bombs like aren't really a thing in Japan, right?
I thought for sure it was a horrible American thing, but no, it's in Korea. It's called a somek, and it's like literally a combination of the word for soju and the word for beer, and it's exactly what you think it is. It's a drop of, or it's a glass of soju dropped into like a small glass of beer.
Wow.
And taken all at once. So that's very popular.
Are we gonna have to do that?
Absolutely. So we're just gonna, you know.
Okay. Join us for a video later when we get pretty messed up. I'm gonna assume.
I mean, you know, like Korean beer, like I think it's similar to a lot of I mean, obviously, like, you know, you find like small, awesome, like geeky breweries everywhere in the world. But the style of beer that you run across mainly, like, that's made in Korea is a lot like the same kind that you find in a lot of Asian countries. It's light, it's malty. It's low ABV.
Okay.
Yeah, not super flavorful, very refreshing. So So you're not like, so it's like a low alcohol, like soju shot into like a low alcohol beer. I'm not going to like put you on your butt.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. It's just, you know.
I could do like one or two of those.
Well, and they even like, one of the reasons that I read for the creation of this or for the popularity of this is it's for people that want, like they like the additional alcohol in the beer. And since the soju doesn't bring too much flavor to it to change the flavor of the beer, they just get a higher alcohol beer by mixing it with the soju.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Yeah.
Let's see where we're going with this.
Korean Boilermaker.
Fun.
So that's what they drink. What about when they drink?
Okay. That's a short answer to that question.
Yeah, they drink often. Now, traditionally, there are a lot of like, there's a lot of drinking around holidays. You know, like in the new year, they drink soju. It's supposed to like chase off bad spirits, bring in good energy.
Of course.
Yeah. They drink like related to the harvest. Because, in the, you know, like when it was mainly agricultural, after they'd finished the harvest,
they'd use the rest of the stuff, right?
Yeah. Then they would brew alcohol. So it was kind of like, you know, a trade off. Now it's just more like, you know, it's just more like days that mark the harvest, just as much as like, you know, we have harvest-based holidays in America, even though we're not all an agricultural society, similarly in Korea, and they drink around those. Like there's like, I like this, there's a, on the 15th day of the new year, they drink what translates to ear-quickening wine. It's just it's a rice wine that's infused with certain herbs, but it's to hurry good news for your new year.
Wait, what does ear quickening mean?
This is translation.
What could that
That's
mean?
The literal translation. Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Lost in translation. I am often.
But that's sort of the, you know, historically there were the drinking was more reserved for holidays and for celebrations. As we move into modern times, drinking developed as much a bigger like mainstay of like just social interaction and culture.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of drinking etiquette in South Korea. Like an absurd amount.
Oh no.
I'd be intimidated to drink there. I don't know. From what I understand, it's like it varies on, you know, situation to situation and through different generations as to what people expect from you. But I'm going to go into some of it because some of it's pretty interesting. It's all interesting.
It's just like could be three podcasts.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know. So a lot like the idea of sort of like the hierarchy of like how you who you respect at the table and like how you drink in relation to that, how you eat in relation to that is very big, like mm-hmm. respecting your elders, respecting your superiors. It's specifically sort of like a influence of Confucianism.
Okay, Confucius. I know him.
I remember. That's where a lot of this etiquette as far as like respecting your elders comes from. So like even before you sit down to drink, if you're out with like a group of your peers or like especially like in a work environment. And that's a big deal. Like people drink like at least once a month with all their bosses and coworkers and subordinates. Like a hoshik or a hweshik. It's like a, you know, everybody goes out together. There's several rounds of drinking at several locations. There's food along with it at first, but then it just tapers off into higher alcohol drinking. So, and it's something you kind of have to do to like be part of the company and like.
Oh no!
Like properly
socialize. It's a job requirement?
It is. It's viewed as a little bit like. Because the idea is basically, like, we drink to be able to speak what's honestly on our mind, to, like, speak openly. Like,
Okay. That's
why we drink together. So if you were to bow out of that, it's a little bit like...
It's like, oh, are you hiding something?
You don't
want us to know about you?
And there's, I think that's a, you know, you run into that in a lot of cultures that have that concept. But it's definitely part of the Korean drinking culture. So when you go out with your group, though, like, even before you sit down, the eldest or the highest ranking member of the group is supposed to get the best seat at the table. And that seat is like... Back to the wall, like facing an exit, like the warmest corner. It's like the whatever the best seat. You know, like when you got like.
So do you have a discussion before everyone sits down? Like, what's the best seat?
I mean, I think you gotta yield to like the, you know, the
whatever
highest ranking.
Want.
And that's generally what it is. There's always a seat that's supposed to kind of go for them.
Okay.
And I mean, this stuff I'm talking about is definitely like the extreme etiquette. I'm sure this is not in every single interaction when you go to dinner in Korea. Mm-hmm. But this is, you know, I think it's cool. So outside of that, you don't ever pour your own drink. Big deal in a lot of Asian cultures. You don't pour your own drink. Somebody else pours it for you.
Okay. What if you have an odd number?
Well, that's okay. You just can't pour your own. Yeah. Like, it's not like once you've poured somebody else's drink, you can't pour. Somebody just doesn't get to drink and then they leave.
I'm just like picturing a bunch of drunk people trying to figure out this math problem. Okay. It's not that intense.
No, you just can't pour your own drink. It's considered rude. You always have to use two hands, both when pouring somebody else's drink and receiving a drink. Like, you hold your cup, like, in your right hand, you support either your wrist or the cup with your left. The only person at the table that gets to use one hand, like, if they're toasting, whether they're toasting or pouring or receiving, is the eldest or the most superior person. That's okay. They can use one hand, but you use your right hand leads, it holds whatever vessel, and your left hand supports. So,
wow, that's a lot of rules to remember when you might be dating.
Exactly. If your elder pours you a drink, I mean, you used to like have to stand. Now it's more like you bow. So if your elder pours you a drink, you bow. And when you, the first drink of the evening, at least, you drink all at once. You drink it. And that's it.
Okay.
And when you do drink, you'll turn away from your elders. So you kind of, they don't.
You hide it.
You do. You hide. You drink it all at once. So I don't. I've definitely like hidden my shots that I'm taking all at once for my elders, but not like as part of a respectful custom, like, because I'm a deviant. But yeah. So you look away. And there is like. Like, it's not like, once again, not at every drinking party, but like there is sort of a I've seen it like on travel shows and stuff, like a sort of like a pass bottle drinking culture, like where you, like, somebody pours you a drink, you drink it, you give them back the empty glass, and then they pass it, and you just kind of pass, so like then they pass it to somebody else, so the bottle moves around and the glass moves around and everybody has a communal drink. That's more of like a ceremonial thing, and okay. Also not is going to happen in every drinking encounter. Right. But
I was going to say that might be good to like give you a break in between drinks. Yeah.
But you know, that's like a lot. Like, what if somebody's sick? What if
somebody's... Oh, yeah. No, that's gross. Yeah. That's not very hygienic. Yeah. But some people might argue that the alcohol will sanitize any drink.
We are not British sailors.
Or your dad.
Exactly. Yeah, this cleans it off. It's fine. So you're never supposed to let somebody else's drink go empty. If somebody's glass is empty, you should always offer to refill it.
Okay.
And a big thing is it's hard to say no to a drink if you're out like at with especially with like professional.
You can't say no. Oh no.
Yeah, it's like you can't, like, there are a couple excuses that fly, either like if you have an allergy, I guess, like I can't drink because I'm literally allergic to alcohol, or I'm pregnant, that would work.
Okay.
Outside of that, religion too, that's respected.
Okay. All right.
But outside of those, saying like, oh, I've had too much, sorry, or like, oh, I'm not drinking right now, sorry. Sorry, that doesn't work.
That's not okay.
No good.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's considered very rude to refuse a drink in Korean culture. Such to the point that, like, when I was researching, I found a lot of websites that were like, or a lot of articles that were like, how to hide your drink, like, when you're out drinking with your, like,
really?
With your company in South Korea. Like, recommending, because, like, I guess you usually get a water glass, and so it's like, well, what you do is you want to, like, spit it in the water glass, or, like, throw it under the table. Like, all of those, like, guys, like, how to get rid of your alcohol.
How to get rid of your drink. Throw it under the table.
Well, because it's a bit of a catch-22. Like, you're supposed to drink to be respectful, but you also should not get drunk at these things. Like, you don't want to be...
Now, that's a paradox.
It's not like some, like, you know, where, like, oh, everybody's supposed to get wasted, and that's the whole thing. Like, no, like, you're, it's a sign of, like, integrity that you can drink a lot, but also hold your own and keep it together. So, yeah, you gotta, I guess, hide that alcohol if you can't handle it. Or you can hope that somebody, Either a black rose or a black knight are the terms.
Who's that?
Will rescue you. It's somebody that volunteers to drink your drink for you because you're too smashed.
How noble.
I know. And I was like, is this just a thing? Like, is it like a recognized thing? Like, I ask you, Liz, to be my black rose and drink this glass of soju for me.
Or do I have to recognize that you're in trouble and come to your rescue? We make a signal before we go out to each other, like...
I think it's, it's a little bit of not announced thing.
What's
like,
your safe word?
You want me to take that for you? Okay. Like, could you please?
you need some help over there?
I've definitely...
Take one for the team.
Definitely done that to people. Like, not taking their drinks, but like, you know, I'm just like, would you like this? Because I wouldn't. Goodbye!
Can you help me with this?
Please save me from myself and this small glass.
Oh, no. Oh, man.
Yeah, so that's, you know, sounds like it's a pretty, pretty intense encounter, being out at one of these, like, business drinking situations. But toasting, obviously, big thing in every culture. We're probably all familiar with, like, gambe, which is similar to, like, kanpai. I'll kind of come from the same.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool.
So it literally means empty glass, I believe.
Straight into the point.
Yeah. But, you know, it's what most, like, it's kind of a generic cheers. I thought this was cool. So once again, in line with, like, respecting your elders, when you toast, you do clink glasses. But the elders should be able to raise their glass the highest, and everybody else should, the lip of their glass should be below. So if you're the lowest on the totem pole, you better, like, your glass better be, like, almost just barely off the table.
It's going to make you get real clear with your relationships with your friends.
Yeah. Well, it's standard in...
Who's the worst among us?
I mean, this is one of the first questions that you get when you meet people, apparently, in, like, business situations in South Korea is your age. Because there's rank, but there's also age. So it's, like, pretty normal that people suss out, like, where do I fall with this group of people?
All right.
So, you know, you've got, like, the newest people in the company would just be, like, just skeeting their glasses along the table. And, you know, you've got whoever's the top raising their glass the highest. But you do clean glasses. There's not the focus. I saw a couple articles that said, like, like, in America, it's always, like, make eye contact. You're supposed to. Not a big focus here.
No.
Like, maybe not rude, but definitely you might freak some people out if you're, like, forcing eye contact with everybody.
They're not worried about bad luck for 7 years.
No.
Bad sex.
Yeah. I think it's even weird when we do it.
It's like, kind of weird, but I'm superstitious about it. So if other people... I don't always do it, but if other people make a point of it, I'm like, okay, we're doing this.
Yeah. I'm not worried. Yeah.
You don't like it? Does it freak you
just
out?
Just a bunch of, like, just dead-eyed, direct eye contact with a group of people. Like,
you don't like this?
Like, it's like, and, like, I gotta look at everybody, and then I...
Look at me, Taylor.
No.
Look
see, at this, me. I'm not... Okay. So I'm going to go drink in South Korea because I don't have to stare at people to take a shot. So gambe is familiar. One that I really liked is literally the word fighting.
Fighting?
Like fighting.
Oh.
Like it's an encouraging dose. So like they'll say like, you know, like, oh, like if you like encouraging your business. So like. Need the booze cast. Fighting. Cheers. it's like, you know, like we got this. It's also something you hear like in sports venues a lot, apparently.
Right,
also, you know, you'll hear it at like these company
it applies
meals.
All across the board.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
That's so cute. I love it.
Yeah. There's also one, I think it's just like zan, which is like the sound of a clinking glass. That's super casual. That's super informal, but you'll hear that too, where they just kind of. The onomatopoeic, like, sound of a clinking glass is a toast. There's weihaiyo, which is something that's similar. It's, like, an encouraging, like to this company. It's, like, you know, to your health, like, whatever.
All right.
So there's a sort of variety of toasts you might hear.
Nice.
I like fighting a lot.
Fighting is my favorite so far. San.
Yeah. San. So outside of that, I did come across, it's a popular phrase that's said in relation to drinking, which is, the translation is, don't stop with one glass, three glasses lax, five glasses is proper, and seven glasses is over drinking.
Oh, it's a delicate balance.
It's very delicate. Because what I've learned is after five glasses, you can't count to seven, probably. No. I mean, like I said, like a lot of what I read, like it was like, well, this is the etiquette that exists. Like, obviously, different people would expect different amounts from you, but it's good to know. I think, especially like the big notes of like, don't pour your own drink. Make sure your elders have a drink. Don't let glasses go empty. Like, respect your elders in any way you can, in, you know, over the dinner table. I think that all probably like is solid advice. And apparently, don't say no.
Don't say no.
Hide your drink in your water glass. Throw it in a plant.
yeah. All the plants in the restaurant are wilting.
All the plants in South Korea are dead.
They're only been watered with alcohol.
I know. They're more soju than plant at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
I really want to just go to like Seoul and drink now.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that would be fun. I mean, it's the, from what I understand, like, it's like pairing your food with your drink as much as your drink with your food.
Yeah, that's true. And that's, I didn't mention that, but I think it's called anju. It's like the concept of food that you have with drinking. Mm-hmm. But that is, that's a super big part. Like, you, towards the end of the night, you might just drink. Like, they talk about, okay, like, these rounds, like, you know, like, where you'll start at a place that's dinner, and maybe you'll just drink beer. Then maybe you'll just drink soju and have snacks. But maybe by the end of the night, you're just drinking, like, a neat spirit. But it's almost always accompanied by food.
Well, that's good. I mean, at least there's that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's something that, like, I feel like most of the other world's drinking cultures feature, like in a lot of, you know, Europe too. Like you always have food,
right,
when you drink.
It's like very American to substitute your meal with a drink.
I think it's just the Puritan thing. It's like you go drink at that bad place where you drink. Food is for moral people.
go drink your alcohol in the dark with your shame.
I know. You can have some stale peanuts. No more.
Perhaps some popcorn. That's it.
It's true. I'm glad that there's more and more like always food at bars, because I think that's something that like I really like about other places I go and really don't like about here. It's like, I'm just here. You don't have like some chips.
You don't have anything I can eat.
Just want a drink. It's a bad idea.
Oh man. Yeah. Wow. No, that's good. I'd be into going to Seoul.
Yeah.
Maybe sometime. I feel like you're more likely to go there on your own than I am, but I would go for this. That'd be fun.
I wanted to, check out those tickets. Figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Maybe.
If you or anybody you know lives in Seoul, wants to visit from a podcast.
Stay with you. Well, thank you to Fiona who sent us that question. And also thank you to all of our Patreon supporters.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's really helpful. We use that money to pay for the supplies we need to make those delicious cocktails for you, and maybe in the future some more video recording equipment. Speaking of which, we're gonna make a video pretty soon. We're gonna drink some soju.
Drink some soju in a couple ways.
In a couple
ways that I'm excited about. A couple ways that I'm not.
So if you want to be one of our Patreon supporters, we're gonna put the link to that in our show notes. And if you decide to support us, we are asking our Patreon supporters to send us questions. I just said Patreon supporters.
Patreon supporters, send us questions.
Send us those questions. Yeah. Booze related questions, please. Yeah. And we'll, you know, we might not be able to make a whole episode out of it, but we will eventually answer it. Also, thanks for everybody who tweeted about the show.
Yes.
That's really cool. We like you. That really helps us get the word out. Some of those people are Austin Wills, Jen Bartmus, Mary Smurl, your mom.
Thanks, ma'am.
Purple Worm, who also made a really cool
old grog
artwork.
That was so good.
It's so good. Sam Bishop, Spirit System, Kat, DJ Gagnon, Amanda Virginia, Magbert, Screaming Into the Void, Joe Whitaker, my brother-in-law Travis.
Ooh, and my brother-in-law Justin.
Yeah, and anyone we missed, thank you so much. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Neat the Boozecast.
I think, right? That's our Twitter?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Also, thank you to Absurdist for our wonderful theme music. And he actually has an EP out now. It's called Venom and Glycerin.
Nice.
Yeah. So check that out, too. Yeah, like we said, we're gonna make a video now, and you can check that out on YouTube. We'll put the link for that there too. Yeah.
So get yourself some soju and come on over to our YouTube.
Come on over. It'll be great. It'll be so good. We're gonna have fun. We will. Oh, we will.
We're doing bomb shots. That's what we're doing.
I'm excited. It'll be great.
It's gonna be good.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks so much. This has been
neat. I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.